WRIF HD2 Detroit.
Comic books, video games, anime, sci-fi. If you've been made fun of for it, we're probably going to talk about it.
One question. Is it too late to change the name?
Nerd Radio starts now on Rip 2.
Pro Tools is finally working. We can do the thing. As we like to say, thank you, Mr. Eric Braun, for introducing us to doing the thing. It is Nerd Radio on Rip 2.
I was sitting there. I was trying to gauge whether that was the opening of the show or not.
I was trying to gauge whether or not that's how I was going to open the show. And I was like, no, you know what? I got a stream of consciousness going. I'm not going to derail this train.
Yeah.
This is it.
They're complaining about the Pro Tools, and now we're committing to that as being the start of the show. I was like, I didn't know if you're talking to me or the audience.
Because I was staring at a monitor. I wasn't even looking in your direction, which I apologize for. Yeah. I do quite often.
I wasn't really sure until you said, this is Nerd Radio. And it was a manner in which was incredibly live.
Incredibly. Yeah. Absolutely. Al Beck, Chuck Bean, hanging out in the studio. Jefferson Morbian in a little bit. So welcome to Wednesday after the 4th of July. Al, how was your 4th of July?
It was wonderful in the future from right now.
Mine too.
5:16 a.m. Monday morning.
It is currently the 3rd of July.
Yes. But, you know, are you looking forward to doing anything special for the 4th or...
You know, at this point, with it still being in the future, but we're talking about what happened in the past.
Yeah.
There's a couple friends or maybe my sister. I might call and see if they're doing anything in the afternoon. And if they are, cool. If not, I'll just.
I got some friends that are probably barbecuing and I'll check in with them early in the day. And then, and then I get to be on the air for Screaming Scott. And that'll be fun.
There you go.
Yeah. I was just saying, just when I signed off Monday morning here at 5:07 or whatever, that I got to practice all my
And at this moment, because we are talking about the future and the past, very X-Men-y, let's record an alternate version of how that airship went. Like, Chuck, I cannot believe you burned the studio down.
Well,
you really should have been more careful with your A's.
It was just sparklers, man,
and your buzzies. Actually, it would. Scotty'd be the first one to admit too that doing something clumsy while filling in for him would be the ultimate.
So screaming.
The ultimate Screaming Scott fill-in shift.
Did he tell you the microphone story?
Reed did.
Yes.
Reed told me about that.
I
was like, you were in there, man. Like, it was the new guy's fault. He's like, I know.
I came in Thursday night, and he's using an alternate microphone because the arm on the microphone broke.
Yeah.
And he said he was in the middle of talking, and it went...
Yeah, it just fell right
just
off.
It came down on his wrist.
Like, of course it's on his wrist.
So he had to pick it up and talk into it until the end of the thing. And
I wasn't listening, but I can just imagine how it would sound. Just like, everything that rocks right here, I'm... Son of a god!
Technical difficulties.
Yeah. So, you know, that's when, you know, radio is live!
Live!
When we let stuff like that
the one we used to have a different microphone on there. Well, actually, the kind that I'm speaking, it doesn't matter. But that one was loose and it used to fall all the time. So I got in the habit of every time I would tighten the little screw.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, that one fell off on Meltdown.
That's the thing that cracked me up is Screaming was like, so I'm using this mic over here instead of this mic. I'm like, you know, you could just unplug them and change them.
Yeah.
Within like 5 minutes before he'd left. Because I was doing the overnight. Before he'd left, I had already taken the mounting off with the arm and everything and put it off to the side and unplugged it from the wall and then plugged the new one into the wall and put the mounting in. And I'm like, boom, there we go. I'm good for the rest of the night.
Microphone.
Yeah. So it's nice to be kind of the technical guy sometimes.
Yeah.
So usually when me and you are hanging out in here, we talk about some comic books. Last week, plenty of stuff came out, but a lot of stuff that we already talk about on the show. So the one book that I brought in that I wanted to talk about, I'm pretty sure you got too. It's Batman and Elmer Fudd.
Did not.
Crossover. Really? All right. Well.
I got the last time they did this.
Yeah.
It was the Green Lantern and, I don't know,
it was something
Marvin
crazy.
The Martian, maybe? I don't know. I don't remember who it was, but it was it's a gimmick and it's, you know, whatever. It's fine. And, I was glad that I had it because I had it, but
I picked it up because the current writer Tom King was working on it.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of his, as is well documented on this show. And you know, it's an interesting pairing, Elmer Fudd and Batman.
The one I did get, I haven't read it yet, but I did get last week, the Jonah Hex and Yosemite Sam. I was like, okay, that.
I saw that.
And I haven't read a Jonah Hex comic since All-Star Westerns was done. I was like, I like Jonah Hex. I was like, all right, I'm getting this. Yeah, I don't even know if it'll be good or not, but it's I had to have it. Anyway, continue your...
Well, the thing I was going to bring up is that I thought is pretty cool about these books is there's two stories. It's like a backup story. There's the main story, which Tom King wrote in this particular book, and then the backup story is... the Looney Tunes universe and the superhero having to deal in the Looney Tunes universe.
Oh, okay.
Which is kind of fun. You know, they did like Lobo and the Roadrunner. They did the Marvin the Martian and the Martian Manhunter.
Of course, yeah.
As a crossover. So, and both, you know, there's the story where the Looney Tunes guy is in a superhero universe and then they flip the script.
Right.
For the secondary story. The thing that was kind of fun about this story is there's a bar that Elmer Fudd goes to where all the Looney Tunes type characters are humanized.
Okay.
Like Bugs Bunny.
Yeah.
And Yosemite Sam is in the bar, Sylvester the Cat or whatever. And it's at one point Elmer and Batman have to like punch their way through the bar in typical Batman fashion.
Nice.
To get to Bugs Bunny and find out who had set the two of them against each other. Elmer and Elmer Fudd is very Frank Miller-esque. Very
crime
noir. In the whole thing, but he still has his lisp. So you have to like stop and think about some of the things he says and go, oh no, he meant this. That's right.
You know what I would actually be more interested in than the actual Warner Brothers DC character crossover comics is the meeting in which
that was pitched.
Not even just that. The meeting, they've already decided they're going to do this. And they sat down and paired characters together.
Yeah.
And somehow they landed on Batman and Elmer Fudd together.
Right,
you know, like
right.
Yosemite Sam and Jonah Hex is an obvious...
couple of cowboys, man.
Yeah, you
Marvin
know.
Marvin the Martian, Martian Manhunter.
Yep, obvious.
Match made in heaven right
but
there.
Elmer Fudd and Batman.
Right.
I don't know exactly how they came up with that. I mean, I'm okay with it.
All right, so we're going to pit Lobo against the Roadrunner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not the Flash.
No, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that would have been great. We're not pairing the Flash and the Roadrunner.
Right.
Anything, but
that would have been fun.
Yeah.
That's a missed opportunity.
Well, see, we should have been in that meeting.
I know, right? These books were $5, which is a little steep.
Yeah.
But, you know.
And honestly, for what I got out of the Green Lantern and whomever, one, I can't remember. Honestly, I can't remember who it was. I don't even think I finished reading it. Like, I was like, I'm glad I have it, but.
Right.
I don't really care. I was like halfway through. I was like, I'm not getting anything out of this.
Yeah.
So I just bagged and boarded it. Although, like I said, when I was going through, and I think Worm had the same idea, because when I was reading an issue of something and they had the advertisement in a comic, I saw the Yosemite Sam and Jonah Hex. I'm like, all right, that one I need.
Yeah.
And it's Jimmy Palmiotti, or however you say his name,
right.
who wrote Justin All-Star. Gray had teamed up for Jonah Hex.
Yep, for All-Star
for
Western.
Years. Even before that, the Jonah Hex book, the Hex book.
Oh, okay.
Before that, before the New 52 thing, they were writing it then, too.
Right.
And it was a great book. So,
tell me something, because this has kind of been, this is a topic I've talked to some of my comic book friends about, and I'm curious where you stand on it. Legacy numbering. Action Comics, Detective Comics went back to their original numbering because they know they're close to like issue 1000.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of talk that when Marvel does their Marvel Legacy one shot, that they're going to take all the books like Daredevil and X-Men and whatever and like pitch them back to whatever number they would be in the run of the book. Where do you fall? Do you like it when the book is like, man, this is the 698th issue of this book, or do you like it better when, you know, you can see that it's a particular run of a book by issue 1, 2, whatever it is?
I think they never should have gone away from the original numbering system. And it annoys me because right now they're saying we should go back to legacy numbering, and they might figure out where exactly the book is and take it from there. And then another 5 years down the road, they'll be like, all right, now this is the number one issue, and they're going to go abandon it.
Yeah.
And it drives me crazy. Now, if they wanted to really renumber stuff, they should do it like a magazine does, or like a National Geographic, where it's like, you know, volume 7, issue number whatever. You know, like maybe they'll group them together. But there is a way to track the chronology of...
Sure.
Like, I don't know. Like, it's... I do understand, like, maybe you could do, like, oh, it's a new creative team, so let's renumber them.
Right.
But to me, it's like, if you go, you know, Batman number, you know, 4, there should only be the one number 4 that you're referring to. Instead of saying, oh, during the new 52 run,
right,
as Batman, or no, like the original.
Volume 9, you know, yeah, number
Bob
4.
Bob Kane, you know, like, I want the number 4. Like, you should know which one. I don't know. That's my take on it, I guess.
I agree.
But even more annoying is going back and forth. I hate this ping pong game that they do.
Sure.
And or like, I remember like reading a Wolverine comic. I got it, and it was like Wolverine number 1000. Why? Where do you get that from? No. Right. That's a bad money person.
Sometimes it feels like an arbitrary number. Like, I think they did that with Deadpool.
Yeah.
Earlier last year or something like that. They're like, this is Deadpool number 75, and the next week is Deadpool number 18. And you're like, wait, what?
Yeah, which, and Deadpool being Deadpool, he's just like, it's a way to mess with people, and it's an element of comedy. Even, I don't know, like, I like that structure of the numbering system, and then you know where you're at.
Sure.
You know? And then, like with me, like, when I file my, you know, comics or whatever, sometimes if I get some back issues of stuff, I actually have to look and see what year it came out, so I know which one is actually early. Why can't I just look at the number and know which one came out before the other one? I should not have to look at that tiny copyright print.
I think that the companies feel like by renumbering it, it's making it easier for new readers, but it's actually making it more difficult.
The only the advantage,
they're running into the thing you're talking about, where it's like, I need issue 4, and then they'll pull out issue 4 from, like, you know, 1994,
right?
And not understand that, no, that's not the issue 4 you're looking for,
or the droids.
No. Not at all.
You know what? That was one of my big things that I didn't like about the new 52 renumbering, was that Action Comics and Detective Comics, and I think Batman as well, were still on the original run.
Yeah.
And so now, like, if you go back and you look at a filing system of Batman or whatever, or Detective Comics, you can do, like, like, one of my stores online that I like is mycomicshop.com.
Yes.
And that's how you, when you search something, if you go Batman, it'll be first run, second run, third run, and give a year.
Right.
But if you were to type in Detective Comics, there are 3 runs. The one that started in 1939.
Yep.
And then whatever it was, 2012 or whatever, the new 52, and then the rebirth from last year.
This is totally nerd, comic book nerdy, but it pissed me off, and I wasn't even collecting it, but it pissed me off when they relaunched Detective Comics for the new 52, and then they got to issue 27 and made a huge deal about it, because issue 27 of the original Detective Comics is the first appearance of Batman. They're like, oh, it's Detective Comics 27 all over again. I'm like, get out! Yeah. Stupid.
No, I don't. Yeah, no, I don't like that. Well, you know what? I mean, like, and I'm okay with, like, trying to relive that a little bit. Like, I know that Marvel has, like, quote, re-released Amazing Fantasy number 15.
Sure.
A number of times. I have one of them, the most recent one they did, I think.
Right.
I was like, I mean, I'll never have the original first appearance of Spider-Man, but it's kind of cool.
But having a reprint is cool.
Yeah, reprinted, and I do have an Amazing Fantasy number 15. It's just worth nothing.
Yeah. You
know? And I already had that story in trade version, but I was like, I've got the comic. I've got a comic that's Amazing Fantasy number 15.
Does the reprint have all, like, the old ads and stuff in it too?
No, I don't think so, but that would actually be pretty cool.
I think I've got one that's got, like, it's a straight reprint cover to cover.
That's awesome.
With the old ads on it and everything. And I'm
so,
like,
stuff like that, I like.
Yeah.
I do like that, but, you know, Amazing Fantasy.
This is the
35th printing.
Right. Did you catch last week's Preacher double feature? They had the first and second episode of Preacher.
Yes.
What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I'm enjoying myself. The Saints of Killers or whatever is pretty badass.
I was slack-jawed throughout the whole first episode of the new season, because it's, you know, wall-to-wall Saint of Killers mowing people down. I'm just...
Oh, my God, yeah.
It was terrifying.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I guess it was a couple weeks ago at this point, but it's not a huge spoiler, but when... Jesse tried to use Genesis on him and it didn't work. That episode ended
right
then. And that was a big, like, oh, damn.
Yeah. Yeah. I was almost, because those of us that have read the comic know that Jesse has a special relationship with the Duke.
Yeah.
And I was almost hoping that instead of it being the Saint, it would have been some version of the Duke.
I know. I was kind of wondering if they were going to work that in somehow or not. And they might.
Yeah.
I mean, that didn't really come up until,
the series. When they were at the one priest's house that Jesse took them to,
yes.
Did you notice that they mentioned something about his past and they kind of like soft zoomed to the fish tank behind him with the treasure chest?
Oh, no.
And I went, because having read the comic, I know what that means.
You know, I don't remember.
You don't remember it?
No.
Yeah. No, you have to go back and check it out because
I've been meaning to reread those comics anyway, but
yeah.
I was going to reread them before the show even started last year, and I didn't get around to it. But,
right.
You know what I actually really liked, though, from episode 2 was they try and get that angel's help to call off their bounty by the Saint the Killer, obviously.
Yeah.
And it takes a while. It takes some speedballing with...
with Cassidy.
Cassidy. But he basically does it under the condition that you don't use Genesis anymore. And just as a little FU on the way out, you know, Jesse uses Genesis on him real quick. And even though he was like in a positive way, he tells him,
yeah.
The angel's like, you know, you just won't learn.
Yep.
And I love that little just like, you know what? All right. You can't. All I have to do is not use this thing that,
right.
You know, removes the people's control. You're a terrible person. All right, no, screw you, you know?
I think it's an interesting quirk for the series to put that limitation on it.
None of our main characters are good people.
Every time you use it, the cowboy's going to show up and murder a bunch of people, so you might want to slow down a little bit.
But it does serve as a reminder that none of our main characters are good people, really, if you think about it. Even
Absolutely.
Jesse, who's a man of the cloth, he's really kind of a terrible person.
Oh, yeah. No, totally.
They're all awful.
I felt like the first season was a big deal, a big part of like showing you that Jesse came from a bad background and is still not a great guy.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know that him doing that on the way out just kind of irritated me. It was very childish.
Yeah.
Because he's in the car, windows rolled down, and he's like, oh, yeah, Genesis. it was like one stage above I know you are, but what am I? The only difference was they had this sweet car instead of a bicycle with like a baseball card in the spokes.
I appreciate the spin on the love triangle between the three of them too is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
It's still there. I think that's what I appreciate about the show the most is that all the characters I read in my comics so far are there.
Yeah.
Those are the characters, you know, it's just that the history has changed and the way events are happening is different.
Yeah.
And I'm appreciating it. I enjoy kind of like rebooting and revisionist history of stuff, like when Marvel did the Ultimate Universe. I thought it was great.
You know what? This is what happens when you get somebody doing a show that is a lover of the material rather than the lover of just making a show or movie.
Yeah.
You know, because Seth Rogen is behind this thing and he's like, I don't need to be in it. I just love these comics so much that I want to bring it to the screen. So he's trying to do it right. You know what I mean? And instead of just being someone in Hollywood that was like, oh, you know, like I heard about this thing and it's good enough to make my own thing.
Yeah.
You know, where he's trying to make Garth Ennis's thing come to life rather than making his own thing, really. You know what I mean? Does that make any
for
sense?
Sure. Like, no,
I mean,
it makes total sense. When
you have somebody who loves the materials more than...
Honestly, I felt the same way about... we'll probably talk about it on the show during a wrestling segment in the next week or two. But I watched the Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling show on Netflix. And I got the same feeling out of that the people that put that show together had a genuine love for pro wrestling and for the source material, which was the old Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling show from like the 80s through the 90s and stuff like that. But it was a great show. It was the first show in a long time that I binged real hard, like within 3 days, watched all the episodes and was like, wow, that was great.
And I were talking about this off mic that it helps that they're, you know, half hour episodes instead of an hour episode.
Yes.
It really does bother me that every show has to be an hour.
Yeah, no,
haven't finished Iron Fist and I have 3 episodes left. And every time I sit down to watch it, that's what I think about. I was like, it's not the greatest show. It's really not.
Yeah.
I don't really care that much. Like, I mostly watch it because I feel like I'm supposed to. And I've only got 3 episodes left. But every time I'm like, I don't really want to put myself through this for an hour.
Yeah, exactly.
If this was 30 minutes, if this was 20 whatever minutes, I could get through this. And I would have blown through it pretty. But like every show, why does everyone want all of my time? Like, that's the part that bothers me, you know?
I don't know, Al. You're making me feel guilty now. Like, I should let you go so we can talk to Jefferson, because I also want all of your time.
Well, I thought I was more subtle than that, but
there you go. There you go. All right. Comic Shop Locator. Find the local comic store near you. And as always, subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and download us on WRIF.com. Al Back will be back next week.
And for Ghoul, our listener.
Yes.
Who thinks I don't actually want to be here. For the record, I'm the one who's always going, and another thing. And you're the one reeling me in. All right, we got to go.
It's true.
It is 11:45, and this is still the first segment.
All right, Al, I'll talk to you next week.
See you.
It's Wednesday night. Time for Nerd Radio on Riff 2. Oh my God.
All right, welcome back to Nerd Radio on Riff 2. It is Chuck Bean hanging out with my good friend Erica, which means it's time to talk about some wrestling.
And it seems like we've been getting together more and more. Man, are you getting pay-per-view fatigue at all?
A little bit.
A little bit. Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. I love coming here and talking wrestling with you. It's a lot of fun.
Right.
But I'm like, you know, if they just stretched out some of those storylines, instead of rushed them in the matter of like 2 to 3 weeks, I mean, you'd get some tense feelings. However,
yeah,
I mean, how long have they been dealing with Lesnar and Joe? And it's already.
Yeah, it's they gave it about 5 weeks, I think, between Raw events this time. And obviously, you had a SmackDown event in the middle of it with Money in the Bank. But I think that was part of back in the early 2000s, that was part of splitting the rosters, is that now, you know, even if each of them has a month between pay-per-views, like, you still get 4 to 5 weeks for that thing. It's just a matter of now you have 2 shows to pay attention to instead of 1 show. So it can fatigue the watcher. I'm always concerned that our listeners are fatigued. Like, there's probably a segment of our listeners that don't care about wrestling whatsoever. So they just tune out. And if they tune out every other week as opposed to every 3 to 4 weeks, I'm like, sorry, guys.
I don't have much sympathy for them. No offense, because I know nothing of the comic world.
As Scott Steiner would say, you got no simpy.
Exactly.
No simpy! I love Scott Steiner. He's a train wreck of a human being, and I love him.
There's a video somewhere online of him. Like, Scott Steiner bought a Shoney's.
He did!
And
he owns a Shoney's. I think it's in Georgia.
Yeah, which I'm like, I didn't even know Shoney's still existed.
Yep.
And there's like a video of him like demoing it. And it's a hot mess.
I was telling Janelle the other day, we were switching shifts. Just one Scott Steiner story and then we'll
then
move on to things.
To business.
But he was doing press for Impact Wrestling Slammiversary last weekend. And he was just doing phoners from his car while he was driving. So he wasn't full Scott Steiner. He was in his car. But he had said something to the effect of he'd read that the Guinness World Record of the amount of women slept with in a year was somewhere around like 1,000 or something. So he took it upon himself years ago to beat that record. And somebody did the math and was like, that means he'd have to have slept with 41 women a day. And it just adds to the legend of Scott Steiner.
It sure does.
Thinks that he's not great at math.
No.
He thinks he has 133 1/3% of beating Samoa Joe at a, you've never seen, I can see by the look in your face, you've never seen this video. He did a promo when Samoa Joe was still with Impact. There was a triple threat. It was him and Kurt Angle and Scott Steiner. And he does this promo about how he's got 133 1/3% chance of winning this match.
Jesus Christ.
It's amazing.
I'm sure. God, he,
things I, fly out of Scott Steiner's mouth, and they're the dumbest things you'll ever hear, and they're hilarious. I've got Amy, who you work with, who's also my girlfriend. She will watch wrestling with me, and I had to show her Because Scott Steiner feuded with Samoa Joe
right.
in Impact Wrestling. I said it was only going to be one story, but there's more.
Too bad. Sorry.
But he feuded with Samoa Joe, and every single promo, people would ask him, Scott, what do you think of Samoa Joe? And he'd be like, he's fat! He's got a fat ass! every time. He yells.
It hurts me. He hurts me.
I know.
And it's I mean, come on. All them steroids have literally gone to his head. It's terrible.
Yeah.
It's so bad.
So let's talk about something else that's terrible.
Yes.
The title for the next event, which is this Sunday, is WWE Great Balls of Fire.
Yep, sure is.
We talked about this a couple weeks ago, yep. How there have been terrible names for pay-per-views all the time. And before we get into the card, I was actually looking online. Bleacher Report had this article that's like five titles that would have been better for this pay-per-view than Great Balls of Fire. So let me run these by you.
Okay.
You give me your first off-the-cuff opinion of what this. Number one, The Man Comes Around.
Okay. I can't fully assess all the names one by one. Just start hitting me
all
with
right.
them.
The Man Comes Around. Here Comes the Pain. That would, you know, Brock Lesnar thing. The Malice in Dallas.
Okay.
How about The Rock? The Rock made this one famous years ago. Penis in Uranus.
I mean, it'd be a great shirt.
It would be. It would be hilarious. Bash at the Beach.
See, I mean, then you have Bash at the Beach or Great. I mean,
Great American Bash. Yeah, Great American Bash was the next one.
They'll never reuse any of those WCW names, which is a shame, even though they own the rights to them.
Yeah.
Like, what? You know Vince came up with it. You know Vince came up with it with how everyone was very leery with, you know, promoting it at first.
And everybody looked at each other and went,
okay. Right.
There have been some terrible, I did look up, we were talking before about, there's been some terrible ones. This Tuesday in Texas was a thing.
Oh, yeah.
Way back in the day. And that was absolutely awful. In Your House, number 8, Beware of Dog. That's absolutely
perfect.
Awful, awful. Let's see. In Your House 16, Canadian Stampede.
I've heard worse.
Yes, we have. Called Great Balls of Fire. So let's get into the card. We were talking about Samoa Joe. I can remember one other Brock Lesnar match I've been this excited about, and that would be Dean and Brock at WrestleMania, and that did not live up to expectations whatsoever.
I still firmly, because like the build up to this has been exponentially better than really most build ups to recent Brock Lesnar matches.
Right.
There's a lot of pressure on it. The build up is fantastic. If it does not deliver, people are going to be pissed.
Right. And I think we talked about this before. If this one doesn't deliver in light of what we know about the Dean Ambrose Brock Lesnar match, we know whose fault it is.
Exactly. Because Samoa Joe has been, to me, like the MVP of both rosters right now. Yeah. Just from sheer presence, his promos have been outstanding.
Absolutely.
I want this for him.
Yeah.
Even if he doesn't win the belt, like
I just want it to be good match.
I want it to be good.
Right.
And it's going to benefit both Lesnar and Joe. So it's like, why you gotta be a dick?
Right.
Why you gotta be a dick, Brock? Why?
It's funny because I'm usually not into the matches that I refer to as like two refrigerators bumping into each other, just the two huge guys.
Same here.
But both of the like kind of big matches in this pay-per-view are specifically those type of matches, and I'm excited for them, which is means they're doing their job right.
Right. Well, the difference between this match and then Lesnar versus Goldberg, there's definitely a stronger skill set.
Yes.
I mean, I look like that, you know, Mania's match with those guys, I'm like, what are they going to do?
Yeah, you look at somebody like Goldberg and you're like, how much is he capable of?
Yeah, what can he really do? Joe, obviously, toward, you know, the tail end-ish of his career.
Right.
He can still go. He can still do things a big man shouldn't do.
I love that, like, the two cornerstones of what was TNA wrestling, which was Joe and AJ, are now on WWE rosters and are still just as amazing as they ever were, if not better than they've ever been. And I think that speaks volumes to a lot of the talent that has never touched the WWE but has come up over in TNA, that there is potential there for them to be fantastic talent, you know, should they ever, you know, head north.
Well, I mean, I think they've finally gotten over the fact that, you know, TNA isn't so much a dirty word anymore.
Right.
Sure, it's not going to be said on programming.
Not at all.
Obviously.
No, not at all.
But when you have, like, you know, Talk is Jericho, any wrestler that was previously on TNA and goes on Chris Jericho's podcast, they openly talk about TNA.
For sure.
Dropping by name, mentioning Dixie Carter, maybe.
Yeah.
But I just think they're, you know, now that they've seen success, they're more willing to go, oh, let's just check them out.
Right. Yeah. They, instead of just being like, oh, there's nobody down there that's worth a damn. Like,
right.
Now there must be more of a mindset of like, hey, you know, anybody, anywhere, New Japan could have some people we want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Ring of Honor could have some people we want. We've got a lot of people from all walks of wrestling life.
I feel like that has a lot to do with how Triple H has taken NXT, because I mean
it definitely feels like it's implied.
Oh yeah, because I mean Vince wouldn't do any of that stuff,
right? That's the one thing about Samoa Joe that that really bothers me, is they never bring up the fact that, like, he carried NXT on his back for a good year or so.
He sure did.
And I'm not saying that there was nobody else on the roster at the time that was worth a damn. I'm just saying that, like, you know, he was in the main title picture, him and Finn Balor,
right?
You know, had a great series of matches, and they never bring it up.
And right,
I'm like, come on, man.
I mean, I'm sure it's going to get a, you know, it's going to be a matter of time before those two face off.
I'm sure,
know, on the Raw roster, and then they'll probably mention it.
Yeah, it's
ideally
a lot like Shinsuke and AJ. It's a back pocket kind of program,
right?
You know, when if you need it, it's there.
Mm-hmm.
We do have Braun and Roman Reigns, which once again, like, make me excited about a Roman Reigns match. Braun Strowman is great.
He well, what's his new, like, nickname now, or what does his new shirt say?
The Monster Among Men.
Monster Among Men. You know, so you have, yeah, the Monster Among Men, Braun Strowman, and do they call him the Big Dog Roman Reigns?
They do.
Okay, so I mean, you got two kitschy nicknames battling it out. Look, will I ever be all in on the Roman Reigns bandwagon? No.
Sure.
But he's proven himself at least reliable.
For sure.
And I feel like it's going to surprise some people.
Yeah, I would think so.
You know, and I'm sure that you're going to have all those people who are going to be bitches. And I get it. Trust me, I do get it. Nobody wants to be dictated to what they should like.
Yeah.
But give somebody a chance, please.
Right, right. He's the new John Cena.
Oh, yeah.
It's cool to hate Roman Reigns, but at the same time, it's not like he's not talented.
Right.
So there you go. I'm super excited to see Sasha and Alexa go one-on-one, because
be
those are my two favorite women's wrestlers in the current WWE product. We got Seth Rollins and Bray Wyatt in a match that does not matter.
No, not at all.
But they're both great workers, so, you know, it could be great. It could be, it depends on if they bring it, you know, to the table.
Right.
Or if they look at it as like, hey, we're in the middle of the card, no one really cares, let's just go out there and put on a three-star match.
Right.
So we'll see about that. Enzo Amore is going to get the crap beat out of my Big Cass.
I know. It's so unfortunate. I feel like they were broken up because once again, Vince never really bought into Enzo and Cass as a team.
Yeah.
So, I'm upset that they broke them up pretty much like a little over a year since they debuted.
Right.
But I don't know. I don't know how they're going to be by themselves.
I don't either. Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that we can't see the long game.
Right.
So it'll be...
I'm cautious.
Yeah, exactly. Cautious, and it'll be interesting to see how it... I don't remember if it was you I was telling this, or if it was one of my other wrestling friends, but I would have loved to have seen a couple of weeks ago when Enzo did the promo with Cass, and he was like, all that stuff you said about me was really mean, but it's all true. I do talk a big game, and I get us in a lot of trouble. And I would like to see Enzo and Cass heel turn, where Enzo says, "Okay, you know what? You drive the car now. I'll do whatever you say because I've messed up." And then he'll come out and do his catchphrase, and Cass will be like, "Uh-uh, no." It would put so much heat on Big Cass, though. It would be easy to make Cass the heel if, you know, every time Enzo went to do something that the crowd loves, Cass went, "Nuh-uh, no, no. You said I'm in charge. I'm in charge. We don't do that now."
Yeah.
Kind of the same way that Matt and Jeff Hardy, when Matt went broken and Jeff would go, he'd go up to the top rope and be like, no, no, no,
yeah.
No, 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 Spot Monkey.
Yeah.
We wrestle this way now. Speaking of the Hardys, they're going to fight Cesaro and Sheamus in a 30-minute Iron Man match. It cracks me up that Iron Man matches have to be 30 minutes now because we don't have the attention span for a full hour.
Oh, no. No, there's no way we can do a full hour anymore.
The only difference between a 30-minute Iron Man match and a regular match is that you know this match is going to be 30 minutes and there'll be more than one fall.
Right.
That's really the only difference about that. Tell me something, because I have my own feelings about this, speaking of the Raw roster. Where do you stand on R-Truth and Goldust?
Okay. I feel like there is potential there.
Yeah.
But I don't know if the current powers that be in creative know what to do with it. Because, I mean, I loved... I remember when Goldust debuted.
Yeah.
And I was a child and I didn't know what to make of it.
Right.
But in hindsight, looking back on it as an adult, I'm like, this was just brilliant.
Absolutely.
And I love him hearkening back to like those old promos and whatnot. I don't know if R-Truth is the one to do this angle with. I mean, obviously, yeah, they were a tag team and that's what kind of led to what's going on, but at the same time, who would you pair Goldust up with?
That's true. I don't, maybe I see. I've seen them try to bring Goldust back and do this with him a couple of times over the last, you know, 16, 17 years.
Right.
And it almost never works.
Right.
Like, I remember they put him in a real short program with Rob Van Dam after a Royal Rumble, after he came back for Royal Rumble, and it didn't work.
Right.
And I don't know. Because, you know, either it's going to fall flat immediately. I feel like this entire program works really well with the live crowd at house shows.
Yes.
But it's just floundering on TV.
Yeah, it's
which is ironic considering how much production goes into the TV spots.
Oh, like, absolutely.
The TV spots are all backstage. Mm-hmm. They're all, you know, Goldust doing his promos and R-Truth doing a parody of Goldust promos.
Right.
I do like the cameraman. Him having the cameraman. Like, I hope I want to see more Goldust matches where he has the cameraman.
Yeah.
To, you know, step in for him. But I don't know. I expect to see that on like the pre-show or something.
Oh yeah.
This Sunday.
Totally.
That's WWE Great Balls of Fire. Looking forward to that this Sunday. And also
it hurts every time you need to say it.
I know. I also wanted to talk to you about, because I feel that we both greatly enjoyed this. Netflix's new show.
Yes.
Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling. This is the first show I was telling Al, this is the first show in a long time on Netflix that I've binge watched really hard. Most shows I can watch an episode and then go a couple days and watch another episode. But this was one of the first shows in a long time that, like, at the end of each episode, I wanted to see what happened next. I think part of that is because they're only half hour episodes and that really helps. But, you know, obviously it's wrestling. So it's something I have a great passion for. And I feel like the writers of the show also have a great respect and joy in wrestling. Have you watched the whole thing?
I've watched the whole thing twice.
Wow.
And, you know, I think, yeah, the bingeability lends itself to, one, the half hour episodes, two, the fact that it's not a heavy drama like a House of Cards, like an Orange is the New Black.
Right.
You know, it's like I still have yet to really like dig into House of Cards. I've seen the first season.
Yeah.
But it's one of those shows where I watch an episode and just go, I just need a...
It's exhausting.
I need a nap. And like, I haven't even started like Handmaid's Tale on Hulu, which I know
is also supposed to be
Really heavy. And I'm like, I don't know if I have the strength. So something like Glow is perfect for me because, you know, the world's hard. And just having, you know, a cool story, you know, because I mean, Glow in and of itself, like wrestling, is a soap opera.
Yeah.
You have multiple characters, multiple personalities trying to figure stuff out. And it was great storytelling. The wrestling cameos I thought were funny.
That was part of what I really enjoyed about right from episode one. I'm like, holy crap, that's Johnny Mundo from Lucha Underground.
Right.
Neat. And then every time you'd see a male wrestler, you'd be like, oh, that's so and so. I didn't even realize that the girl that plays Welfare Queen. That's Awesome Kong.
Yeah.
I had no idea. It was amazing.
I think one of the things I loved was going on Twitter and seeing like fan reaction and whatnot. And poor Alex Riley.
Yeah.
Because I think one tweet said something along the lines of, oh man, Glow is totally unrealistic. There's no way people would get behind Alex Riley this much.
Brutal.
In what world would Alex Riley be over like this? And I'm like, damn, poor Alex Riley.
I was going to say, though, that was probably one of my favorite moments in the episode is when the soap star goes to the wrestling show and sees the match. And
gets it.
Yeah, there's that light bulb moment. She's like, it's a soap opera. Oh my God, it's a soap opera.
Oh my God, I get this.
Yeah.
I get it now.
And that was like, yes, yes.
Also, the scene where he essentially grabbed her upper boob, and I'm like, hey, Gutsy.
Right?
I'm like, wow. I mean, sure, it's a show, but I'm like, ooh, if that was in real life and someone went, like, palmed my upper chest, I would have been like, hey, okay. Yeah.
Wait a second.
I mean, sure. There's some tension here, but come on.
But a bunch of great actors and actresses in there. It actually has led me, once I got done, that's why you've watched it twice. I've watched it once and then watched the first couple episodes again.
Mm-hmm.
It led me to Mark Maron, who plays the producer.
Oh, I love Mark Maron.
He was not on my radar until I watched this show, and I was like, I love this guy. So I went and watched his stand-up, and I'm like, I love Mark Maron. Now I'm watching his show on Netflix and enjoying it, because he's great. I talked to Al about him. He's like, because Al loves stand-up comedy. He's like, yeah, I know all about Mark Maron. So that's fantastic. I already loved Alison Brie from Community, and you know she's great in this show. She's kind of the centerpiece.
Yeah, and definitely, I don't want to give up any spoilers, but like, there's some very surprising like twists and turns in the first episode.
Yeah,
where you went, no, 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 damn it.
Yeah, well written.
Very well written.
Fantastically put together, and I can't say enough good things about it.
I know. I loved it.
I loved it.
I'll probably watch it all the way through again.
Yeah. I started showing Amy a couple episodes, and she's like, I can't believe Erica loves this because it's so sexist. Because she's only seen the first couple episodes.
Well, it's a period piece.
Yeah, it's the 80s.
Yeah, it's the 80s.
But that's what I was trying to tell her, is like, by the end of the show, even Mark Maron's character, who's super sexist at the beginning of the show, he doesn't turn less sexist, but you get a feeling for all the characters about how, like, they all have baggage, and just trying to
survive
in the society that they are in, kind of thing. And that doesn't, you know, that doesn't forgive everything that any of these characters have done.
Yeah, well, first of all, if this were an 80s show and it was completely PC, it wouldn't be believable.
Yeah.
Sorry,
right.
It wouldn't.
The robot's full of drugs.
Yes, exactly. The costume party at the rich millionaire's mansion, or rich producer's mansion. I mean, it just like there are definitely like silly, kitschy things too. Oh, here we go. You had Carlito and Brodus Clay as the brothers to Machu Picchu.
Yep.
So, I mean, yeah, the cameos were fantastic, and I don't know if they've said it's been renewed for a second season. I'd be shocked if it weren't.
I would certainly hope so. I don't know where you go from here, but I want to know.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to see more.
Yeah.
And if you haven't already, because you've been busy watching the show, there is a documentary on Netflix about the original Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling. Fascinating.
Really interesting. It's I think it's less than an hour and a half long. So, I mean, you can watch it. It's a quick watch.
There's a handful of stuff that they pulled directly from the history of the original Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling show in the 80s, which is absolutely fascinating. Machu Picchu's character is essentially Mount Fuji, who I'd never heard of until I watched this. I'm like, wow, she's great.
Mm.
I didn't know Ivory was one of the gorgeous ladies of wrestling originally, who, you know, eventually moved into the WWE. That's amazing.
Yeah.
So, good stuff.
I love it.
Good stuff. Can't recommend it highly enough. Well, we'll have you back in a couple weeks. We got SummerSlam coming up. Hopefully we can get Ray and Janelle in here. Some SummerSlam.
We'll see.
And we also have Battleground, SmackDown's last event before
SummerSlam,
SummerSlam. So it'll be, we'll talk to you in a couple weeks, Erica.
All right.
Thanks
good.
For coming in.
Yay.
Nerd Radio comes back right after this.
This is Nerd Radio on Rift 2.
He's like a person and a horse.
Welcome back to Nerd Radio here on Rift 2.
Welcome back to Nerd Radio here on Rift 2.
It is fun, and we're here. Chuck, I can't believe you just completely stepped on my toes and stole my thunder and a Motley crew of other things.
I'm sorry, I didn't have my headphones on yet.
Yeah, sure.
I didn't hear you starting.
That's what happened right there.
I was in the other room.
Yeah. No, you're not. You're sitting right there. Gonna dispel that little bit of magic right there. You are right there. So, my name is Jefferson. Right here is my compatriot, the jerk.
Complete.
Come out!
Whole Chuck Mean.
Ah, jeez.
How you doing, dude?
I've been pretty good.
Yeah?
Yeah. Been hanging out, playing some games.
Yeah,
watching
same here.
Some movies.
Yep.
One thing that, unfortunately, we've kind of been neglecting giving the grace that it deserves is E3.
It's true. We, me and you had a conversation, which kind of went into the archives and is now stale.
Yes.
Before E3 happened, we went over a list of games that were coming out at E3, and you know, kind of went through the list and what are you interested in? What have you never heard before? Kind of thing. But we didn't, like I said, that didn't make it to air. So it's kind of sitting like one of these days, you guys will get to hear like the B sides, like here's the stuff that didn't get to make air, and that's where it is. But yeah, E3 happened
the
like
time sensitive stuff that we totally did not actually successfully get in at the right time.
Right. But E3 happened a couple of weeks ago, and I was monitoring my social media while it was going on, because that's what you do with these big events if you're not there already.
Yeah, there's all kinds of people making sure that everyone knows everything that's going on for E3.
Right, so. And all the companies, like, well, as soon as they show the trailer at E3, like within the hour, they've got it on their Twitter or their Facebook, so you can see it and stuff like that. A lot of cool games to see this particular year. I was interested the Spider-Man game that they've got coming out, which is not connected to the movie in any way.
Right.
He's got an interesting kind of redesign to his costume, and it's essentially a lot of what the Spider-Man movie games of, you know, 10 years ago, Spider-Man 2 and Spider-Man 3 were like. It's Grand Theft Auto Spider-Man.
Which is always going to be a lot of fun.
Open world sandbox Spider-Man, which is everything a Spider-Man game really needs to be.
Honestly, yeah. Spider-Man's pretty cool to play as. I mean, you can essentially fly, of course.
Yeah, you swing through the city and people yell for help, and there is a story going on, but you know, you can stop and stop a purse snatcher or stop a robbery or whatever. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty cool. Got to see some more of that Agents of Mayhem game from E3. That's the Saints Row people.
Yes.
That's their new game. Which I'll tell you, I've been playing Saints Row 4 off and on here for the last month or so. I thought I was near the end. And I'm, according to my save game, I'm only like 75% done.
I mean, 75% still...
That's still a lot.
And plus, with like games like that, when you get to like 75%, that means that there might be some side quests that you may need to do. That's like the danger of seeing the percentages of a game like that.
I love that, though. As much as
it's like I get 25% more content and I feel like I've gotten my money's worth already, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. And that's not even counting in like downloadable content.
Right.
That game
has a lot of it too.
I think it has three or four different DLC you know, extra things to do. Some Minerva's
Dunnish. Extra, read all about it.
But yeah, so you know, I gotta get through that game, then I gotta play Get Out of Hell, which I heard was short.
Well, it's
and then
it would have been
right, and then I'll be ready for Agents of Mayhem.
Yeah,
because those games are fun. There's a new Destiny on the way.
Yep,
for those that are into that. Call of Duty's coming back with some World War II-age, which not being somebody who's heavily invested in Call of Duty, I'm like, but they did that already.
Well, they're doing it again, and this time with a new system.
Right.
One thing that dropped, and I'm going to be interested to see how it works out, is Assassin's Creed Origins.
Okay.
So that's Egyptian theme, which I thought was interesting that it goes with
that's interesting.
The magic kind of
talking about the current magic set is like Arabian Nights Egyptian themed.
I feel like that's gonna be a good game if they handle it well, because I don't think there's a lot of games that target that time period. So it'll be interesting to see what...
There haven't been a lot lately, that's for sure.
Yeah, lately, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. So it'll be interesting to see what angle they take with it. Like there's pharaohs, and it'll be interesting to climb a pyramid and
get your
viewpoint from up there.
Get up to the top of a pyramid and look around.
Yeah, I wonder what kind of supernatural things are going to
happen. Hop off the top of that.
Yeah.
Oh, man, what if the... Like the not the pharaohs, but what were the dudes with like the animal head, like Anubis?
Yeah, Anubis
and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, what if those guys? What if you get to assassinate one of those guys? Whoa!
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, there was priests that wore and like.
Yeah, but what if it's like literally like an Egyptian god or something crazy?
That'd be red.
I feel like they wouldn't do that. They try to keep it semi mundane, at least. I've kind of given up on like the long art, like overarching Assassin's Creed storyline, though. Like it.
Oh yeah, forget about it.
It's not really cohesive anymore.
It's like Metal Gear. You get about two Metal Gear games in, and you're like, none of this makes any sense anymore.
And they kind of dropped. They killed off the main character, and they haven't really picked it back up since then.
Yeah,
or at least I haven't seen anything.
Right.
Maybe there's like a couple of cutscenes that I just missed or something. All right.
We'd totally be remiss if we didn't mention the new Mario game. It's Super Mario Odyssey.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Is, once again, just an open sandbox world, mm-hmm. open world Mario game.
Yeah, I believe you can also play as Oddjob Mario, of course.
Yeah, throwing your hat everywhere.
Throwing your hat all over the place.
It's interesting because like, he's running around in a world with people, and the people are people-sized, and he's still Mario. He's tiny.
He's very short, man.
He's still cartoony and stuff.
Very short Italian plumber. Yes.
But his ability in this game is he throws his hat, and if it lands on certain stuff, like you take control of it, almost like Kirby.
Oh, my gosh,
except
yeah.
Kirby breathes people in.
Yeah, he straight up eats them.
He inhales people.
And turns them into stars and spits them back out.
Right. Mario's just like, whoop, just tosses his hat at people. So it'll be interesting to, you know, see.
Mm-hmm. That's for sure.
Once I get a Switch, I guess.
Yeah, so, you know, like, lots of exciting stuff happening on E3. Is there anything else you wanted to
Oh, it's not E3 related, but holy crap, did you see the Super Nintendo coming out this fall?
I've not, no.
Last year, there was the NES. Yep. There was the tiny NES.
Yep. Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I have seen this. Yep.
Yeah, now this year, they're making a tiny Super Nintendo, and the list of games is just amazing.
And, you know, there's going to be so many fans out there that are going to eat those up.
Yeah, that's the bad part of it is the list of games is amazing, but it's also like, well, I'm never going to see one of these.
Yeah.
Because, mm-hmm. like, I mean, right off the top, of course, there's Super Mario World, there's Zelda, Super Metroid is in there, which is great. But then you've got Star Fox 2, which never ever saw release, ever, which is great. But the thing that sold me on it that, you know, like, if I see one, I'll drop the money on it was Earthbound, right. Final Fantasy III, Super Mario RPG. Like, wow. Like, any of those three games alone are as expensive as the Super NES thing.
That's a power trio right there.
Right. And then, you know, you've got Kirby's Dream Course, Kirby All-Star, Street Fighter II, Donkey Kong Country, Mega Man X, Yoshi's Island, Secret of Mana, Contra 3, like, Super Punch-Out. Holy crap, man. There's, like, 21 games in this thing. And they're all gold. Like, every one of them are.
Every single one, yeah.
Some of the, like, I expected to just be a bunch of first.
That's like
party games.
A lot of people's childhoods right there.
Yeah. I expected to just be like a bunch of Nintendo's own games on there, but to see, you know, that they got the license for Final Fantasy III. They got Super Mario RPG. I'm just like, wow. But there is this thing in the back of my head that's like, just get a Raspberry Pi. Just get one of those little Raspberry Pi, thing, the emulator things.
Yeah.
That plugs into your TV, HDMI cord, and you're good to go.
Yeah, you know.
So, we'll see.
But, you know, I imagine they're going to want to remaster those too, but...
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes.
I guess we'll have to wait and find out.
Yep.
All right.
Xbox One X, too.
Oh, yeah. Which is just an Xbox One.
It's Xbox One with some fancier things, and I think the biggest thing that they're trying to push is 4K.
Yeah.
Which is, it's cool, but, and honestly, like, that will make it the best system on the market.
Right.
Just by virtue of PS4 hasn't come up with anything yet.
Right. Well, over the PS4, they're busy playing with the VR stuff.
True. Yeah. Yeah, but so that will be the best console on the market.
Which is way out of my price range.
Yeah.
Speaking of things that are way out of my price range.
Well, yeah, speaking of things that are right, way out of your price range, to get the full thing out of the 4K console is you need a 4K TV.
Yep.
So, you know what? You can get the new system, but if you don't have the TV, then guess what?
Does not matter.
You're going to be like, oh, why is it not looking as pretty as I think it is? And the answer for that is because... You're still putting on the same
monitor, and you're not really getting the full 4G experience. 4G? 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 No, 4K.
I don't know. You're a PS4 guy. I'm a PS4 guy, right?
But I'm trying to be inclusive.
Do you feel like you're missing anything Xbox related? Because I don't.
Honestly,
one of our listeners, Ghoul, was like, he saw the video for that Cuphead game that's on the Xbox, and it's going to be on the computer as well. And he's like, "Well, system seller, I'm in." And I was like, "But I'll just play it on the computer." The only thing I'm missing is my couple of friends that, you know, went Xbox and not getting to play online with them.
Yeah, I miss those guys.
Not to get to play like Mass Effect Andromeda or stuff with them.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of a bummer.
I'm still thinking about getting that game when it, you know, hits $20, you know?
Yeah.
On the,
I feel like a jerk because somebody bought me that game for my PC and I just haven't sat down to play it.
Oh my God.
Because playing on the PC is different.
Joke.
Playing on the PC is different than playing on the, you know.
Why are you doing jokes?
I'm not sitting on a couch. I'm not.
Why are you doing that joke?
Because I'm dumb.
There you go. That's the answer I wanted to hear.
Because I'm dumb.
Yeah, right.
I'm in a difficult situation here. I mean, after all, you're nerds.
Have a great weekend.
See you later, nerds.
And we're out.
Even the Pro Tools was like, I'm bored.
So confusing.
Even the Pro Tools was like, this is boring to me. you Pro Tools. I was interested.
Right.
What Al was talking about.
You've been listening to the Nerd Radio on Rift 2 podcast. Each week, the podcast can be found on our website, wrif.com, and on iTunes at Nerd Radio on Rift 2. The show airs live Wednesday nights on your HD radio at 101.1 FM HD Radio 2 and features live music not heard during the podcast. Contact us at Rift2Nerds on Facebook and Twitter and email the show at Rift2Nerds@gmail.com. And thank you for listening to the Nerd Radio on Rift 2 podcast.